than the official ban, but then declined to say whether global warming was real. All right, we'd like to close this demonic program on a bit of a positive note, so we will refrain from talking about any of the numbskulls the cabal that runs the Republican Party may be serving us up in 2016. And note, with a slight glimmer of hope, that the cabal that runs the Democratic Party might, and we stress might, turn to the one guy out there who's been addressing the real issue of global warming, which is probably the world's number one issue. That would be former Vice President Al Gore. It's an interesting idea, and we'll have more to say about it in the weeks to come. This program was produced by Edward Lucifer McMillan. You've been listening to Radio Parallax, and yes, we certainly do relish the freedom that we are offered in producing a radio program like this to do whatever the hell we want. We hope you found this hour informative and entertaining, and we welcome your feedback, so don't hesitate to drop us a line at info@radioparallax.com. And now I think we got to go out the way we came in, with the best song ever written about the devil.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple.
This is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. That music is The Doctor by Loudon Wainwright III. The Doctor's Inn is a show to present health-related issues or subjects, some of the subjects being simply informational, some of them possibly being controversial. They may be subjects that could affect you as an individual or possibly the community as a whole. To request subjects for this show, please email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. That's klogan.md@yahoo.com, or drop me a note here at KZFR office in Chico. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the listeners, KZFR members, and by the Butte County Economic Development Corporation, creating awareness and opportunities for local businesses to build a sustainable and innovative community. More information can be found at butte-edc.com. And by Peter Tichinen, that's Tichinen, in association with Baywood Real Estate, a local real estate firm established in 1962. Peter Tichinen and Baywood Real Estate are happy to support community radio and can be reached at 680-1900 or at chicohomes.com. Remember, I'd like you to know that the opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. I want to remind you that the latter piece of today's show will be Dr. Lundberg from our public health department giving us a public health update, so stay tuned for that. And before we begin today's show, I'd like to again inform listeners about the free clinic here in Chico. It's called the Shalom Free Clinic, which is open each Sunday, except this Easter in a couple of weeks. But it's usually open on Sundays, 1 to 4 p.m., and it's located at two sites, actually. The medical clinic site is at 1010 Mangrove, right next to Access Dental. And the other site is the First Christian Church at 295 East Washington Avenue, and that's where we do behavioral health, and there's a no-cost meal if you're interested, and that's each Sunday, 1 to 4 p.m. The contact phone number would be to call Nancy at 518-8422. That's Nancy at 518-8422. 1-800-522-2222. Okay, for today's show, we're gonna jump into the realm of, or the issue of, healthcare availability, and specifically the realm of the functioning of the Affordable Care Act, and about an alternative correction or fix to that, that is, a fix to our healthcare system relative to healthcare availability for all of us, not some of us kind of, but all of us equally and appropriately. Today, we are fortunate to have on the line Dr. Bill Skeen, who is the executive director of the California branch of a national organization called Physicians for a National Health Program, or PNHP. Dr. Skeen, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Nice to be here, Ken. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking time out of your day for this. So, Dr. Skeen, a couple things we want to talk about today, specifically to begin with, is the Affordable Care Act, and I want to have you remind me what the full name of that is in a minute, but we'd like to talk about and hear the pros and cons of that system, because in reality, at some point in time today, we may talk about a way of correcting some of the cons. What do you think?
Sure. I'd be happy to. As originally passed back in March, I think on March 23rd of 2010, so actually the fifth year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act is coming up here in a few days. Mm-hmm. The act was entitled the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Over the last few years, they seem to have stopped talking about the patient protection part and simply referred to it as the Affordable Care Act, or the ACA. I think the goals of the ACA are implied from the title, certainly to make healthcare affordable for all, also to protect patients, I think, in two different ways. One would be their health, of course, and the other perhaps would be from the heavy financial burden that can be incurred when someone has healthcare needs.
And then you said four things. Is that what you told me earlier? Four things were to be in the Affordable Care Act. It would be affordable to protect patients. And then were there a couple other items that we should talk about?
Yeah.
So as far as the goal,
to clarify what the Affordable Care Act does, you remember it was a 2,000-page bill, ugh. So it's really quite complex. But we can boil it down to about four major areas that the bill addressed. So the first one, and a very important one, is it expanded the Medicaid, or here in California we call it the Medi-Cal program. I think most Americans think that the Medi-Cal program, which was established in 1965 at the same time as our Medicare program for seniors, I think most people believe that Medi-Cal was the program that provided, you know, access to health care for poor people. In reality, it only provided, as you probably know as a practicing physician, it only provided access for certain categories of poor people, usually related to women and children, but not to everyone who was poor automatically. So the first change the Affordable Care Act did was to change the eligibility for Medi-Cal to 138% of poverty level. So anyone whose income is up to 138% of the annually calculated federal poverty level is now eligible for Medi-Cal in California. So Medi-Cal is clearly now a program that is meant to give access to health care to low-income people. So that was major change number one. The second change was the goal of having health care available to everyone, available is one way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Actually, how that was accomplished was by passing an individual mandate. So actually, all Americans are now required to have health insurance and to provide proof of health insurance when they do their tax returns, coming up, of course, now on April 15th. So if there is, if someone neglects to get health insurance before April 15th, the penalties kick in this year. And next year, the penalties go up significantly. So the individual mandate is the approach they took to encourage everyone to get some kind of health insurance. So that would be the second major change that came out of the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
Number three would probably be the establishment of health benefits exchanges in the states. So the states were encouraged to set up their own health benefits exchange. California took this to heart and was one of the first states to get on board and get its exchange up and running successfully. And here in California, we call that Covered California. A lot of people are under, well, some people at least are under the impression that Covered California or Obamacare itself is an insurance program, and it is not. Obamacare is a set of changes that we're talking about right now. And Covered California is basically just an online marketplace where private insurance companies list their products and people, there's a comparison tool. You can look and see what plans are available in your geographic area. You can see what the benefits are covered and how much it would cost you. And then hopefully you make an informed choice about the health insurance plan that you pick. So again, these are private health insurance plans that are being offered on a government website for comparison purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the third thing. So finally, I would say there are many things the Affordable Care Act did, but I think the fourth one of really major importance that we should discuss for your listeners is increasing regulation on private insurance companies to limit some of the harm that in the past they have done to patients, basically in the name of profit. So some of these regulations I think most of us are familiar with now. One of the first ones to roll out was allowing children to stay on their parents' policies until they're the age of 26. Another one was doing away with pre-existing coverage exclusions, which basically were when you signed up for health insurance in the old days, before the Affordable Care Act, and say you had asthma or some other condition, they would provide you with health insurance, and it would pay for everything that ails you except for any pre-existing condition. And usually that went for 1 or 2 years. And after 2 years of having insurance, then and only then would they start to pay for, say, your asthma treatment. So you can see how being excluded from care for something that's probably your primary health condition was difficult. And then there was yet another really egregious practice where people who had health insurance and were basically healthy, but then maybe they came down with some kind of significant illness and needed to use their health insurance, would apply for cover. Well, they would already apply. They tried to make a claim, and the health insurance companies would actually go back through their original application. And if they discovered something as simple as acne that you did not remember to put on your application for health insurance, they would accuse you of fraud, saying that you basically lied on your health insurance application, and therefore they would cancel your policy on the spot. I laugh just because it's so ridiculous, but not it's obviously a sad situation. So
right.
People sometimes, just as they needed their health insurance most, the insurance companies would find a way to cancel it, therefore not having to pay for what could be expensive treatment. So, and why would an insurance company do that? And basically it's because private insurance companies, like all corporations, exist to make a profit for their shareholders. And if they can, and so that creates a very perverse incentive in our system where they look for ways to avoid paying for our health care.
So
Obamacare, in short, or the Affordable Care Act, passed a bundle of regulations that that improved or eliminated some of the more egregious practices. So I would say that those are the four major accomplishments. So the expansion of Medicaid, the individual mandate, the health insurance benefits, and increased regulation on private insurers is how the Affordable Care Act aims to improve health care for this country.
And as I hear those four issues or ways that the Affordable Care Act is affecting us, the thing that comes to my mind is something you mentioned a bit there, and that is, other than the expansion of Medicaid program, which I think has been a good thing as a practicing physician, the other three, the individual mandate, the Covered California exchange of private health insurance companies, let's say those two, what comes to my mind is we are talking about, as you said, the private health insurance industry and they are here for profit. So I don't know, this is something we probably talk about later, but I just have to say it. The profit of the health insurance companies continues. And the Affordable Care Act has allowed that made it in such a way that their profits will continue. Who takes a hit on this is the people. For instance, the individual mandate, you're taxed if you don't have a health insurance policy. And then the other thing about the covered California exchange, the health benefit exchange that you get to pick from now, yes, and enter into what I call the pool of patients who are underinsured. In other words, the covered California exchange policies, although we say, yes, a person has now health insurance, and because of the Affordable Care Act, now everyone has health insurance, or they pay a penalty in taxes, when they go to use this health insurance policy, they can't afford to because of the co-pays, because of the deductibles, because of the cost of the medications, on and on and on. So I don't know why I brought that up so quickly, but there it is. I was talking a few minutes ago about the Shalom Free Clinic and that we have here in Chico, have for the last 7 years, 8 years. And I will tell you, something has changed over the last, I'd say, year or so. And that is, I'm surprised by the number of patients that come in who indeed have insurance, but cannot afford to use it. Or the other problem that has come up, as you may know, is with this this Covered California Health Insurance Exchange. Yes, you may have a bronze or silver or whatever level you have, but now try to find a doctor. Try to find a doctor who is able to see you on that plan, who's contracted with those particular health insurance plans, is very difficult in at least our part of the state. So,
right.
I just had to throw that out, as in insurance policy availability, but not in healthcare availability, unfortunately.
Yeah, those are really excellent points, and of course I agree with them. But if we stick for just a second longer,
yes,
on what the Affordable Care Act has done.
Yes, yes.
then
we're still on the pros.
Continue on. Yeah. There are just a couple more things that I did want to throw out on the pro side.
Very good.
Just so that, you know, we have a fair discussion here. So,
sure.
So millions more Americans, maybe around 10 million, or the estimates vary from 9 to 15 million Americans, now do have health insurance directly because of the exchanges across the country. So standing next to nothing, that's definitely an improvement. So more people,
yes,
have access, have health insurance. As you point out, one other benefit. So recently I went through a Covered California training. It was actually a 10-hour training, so it was fairly intensive, but I am now much more familiar with how the health benefit exchange works.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, on the exchange, you find plans listed in four metal tiers. So you get platinum, silver, gold, and bronze. And then depending on where you live, you're offered maybe plans from, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 companies within those metal tiers. But one thing that I discovered is actually, you know, that it did include a basic minimum benefits package. And so the coverage that you get for any Covered California plan is really basically the same benefits package. What varies between those four metal tiers is your out-of-pocket expenses. So if you go for one of the lower tiers, the bronze plan, you're going to really have high out-of-pocket expenses. And if you go for the platinum plan, you're going to pay more monthly premiums, but you'll have lower copays. So so again, I would say that the good part of that is standardizing benefits so that everybody has access to the same kind of health care. But it still leaves quite a bit of problem paying for the health care between both the premiums and the out-of-pocket expenses. One other thing I would add is the federal government does provide tax subsidies. And recently I saw that something like 83% of the people who signed up for health care through the exchanges in their states actually qualified for subsidies. So that was a definite attempt to make healthcare affordable for the people who are newly getting insured on the health benefits exchange. Clearly, okay, so that's
a good,
another pro that I would
That's
mention.
A pro. I agree with you. I hear you on that.
Yeah.
And just to let the listeners know, by subsidy, we mean for the premiums, for the monthly premiums for that health
yes.
insurance policy. Uh-huh. Subsidies for that.
Yes, and
depending on your income.
In two different forms, but one form is a rebate on your tax returns.
Oh.
So you do have to actually file a tax return every year in order to, even if you don't have anything to declare,
mm-hmm.
to get your federal tax return back. And the return is, in it's not just credits, it really is a dollar amount that can be sent to you in several different ways, monthly or at the end of the year, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for some people, that definitely has made it, you know, made it a little easier to afford than if they had to pay the full price for private insurance themselves.
Yes. And then tell us, as far as the policies, what the policies entail, cancer screening tests, where they sit in this as far as the Affordable Care Act and what has to be available.
Yeah.
Mammograms and pap smears and that kind of thing are essentially need to be covered by that policy. Is that correct?
Yes. Really good point. So the essential benefits package was mandated to include 10 things. Some of them are, you know, standard, like hospital admission, being able to see your doctor, pharmacy, get labs done, and that kind of stuff. But additions were preventive services was a major addition. So a lot of those kinds of things you just mentioned are now available for free. So that definitely put a good focus on prevention, which was another goal of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, and I I agree. That's one of the definitely one of the pros of the Affordable Care Act. then shall we? I guess I started some of the cons in my rant that I did a minute ago. But how do you see that as far as what is not working quite right with the Affordable Care Act.
Right. Well, I might just throw out something we can seg back to later on. But so when this national health care reform debate began back in 2009, and all these committees were formed to look at ways that we could improve our health care system for Americans, the leaders of Congress and the administration, chose to look at our private health insurance system, which is basically for people less than 65 years old, and see what they could do to that. Another alternative approach could have been to look at our Medicare system, which is public health insurance for seniors and the disabled, and use that as a departure point to build a new system. So we can come back to that a little bit later. But the Affordable Care Act did not really change our underlying system. I would view what it accomplished as a series of many band-aids to try and make our current system work better. So definitely there's some major things that were not achieved. For instance, even despite the individual mandate, et cetera, not everyone is actually covered. And they're estimating that before the Affordable Care Act, somewhere close to 50 million Americans had no health insurance whatsoever. And now after the Affordable Care Act, that's going to drop down from 25 to 30 million people who have no coverage. So we have not achieved universal coverage. A big reason for that is because a lot of the states, particularly in the South, decided not to expand their Medicare program.
Uh-huh.
That was made optional by the Supreme Court. So those states, if you're on Medicaid, if you could use Medicaid, you're kind of out of luck if you live in the South and a few other states. So. But here in California, where we did expand Medi-Cal, there's still going to be 3 to 4 million Californians who don't have health insurance. About half of those are going to be people who are undocumented. And the other half are people who don't know they're eligible. That could be because of language and cultural barriers, for fear of signing up with a government program, et cetera, et cetera. So universality was not. And then there's also the people that fall through the cracks. So there's the people that, you know, maybe they're at 139% of poverty level instead of 138, and they're just not finding it affordable, even with the subsidies. And those people are unfortunately going to be penalized if they don't get coverage. And then, you know, there are some people who will just pay the penalty, rather than get health insurance. And not probably a good decision on their part, you know,
healthcare wise.
Until Apple can invent the crystal ball to tell us when we're going to be in a car accident and we're going to need our health insurance,
right.
I think it's a better idea for people to be covered all the time. So the Affordable Care Act did not achieve universal coverage. I think you mentioned, what you mentioned is we're now a nation of underinsured people. There are significant out-of-pocket payments that we are the only developed nation in the world where it's possible to have health insurance and still need to declare bankruptcy because you can't afford the copays. And in fact, this happened last year to one of my neighbors down the street who had breast cancer and radiation. And I think she was left with about $20,000 in copays, and she just couldn't handle it. So the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act did not protect us from bankruptcy, and it did not make it affordable. And I would also include not just under insurance through the private plans on the exchange. I would say that Medi-Cal is under insurance also, and mostly because only 43% of physicians in California will accept Medi-Cal. So on paper, you're entitled to coverage, but good luck finding a doctor. That's a difficulty for many people in parts of the state.
Yeah, it's up here in Butte County area. Well, let's take Chico, for instance. Essentially, someone with one of the Medi-Cal, we have the managed care Medi-Cal here in our area is Anthem Blue Cross and California Health and Wellness. And then also the Covered California plans. Essentially, to my knowledge, essentially the two places that a patient with either of those areas of coverage can find a physician or a nurse practitioner or physician assistant would be at Northern Valley Indian Health or Ampla Health Chico, the community health clinic here. As a general rule throughout our community, like you said, physicians do not accept Medi-Cal and are not contracted with the Covered California plans. By the way, in our area, the two Covered California plans are Blue Cross and Blue Shield. There are no other players in that. And those plans are not readily contracted plans relative to our doctors in our area. So the clinics like Chico Family Health, Ampla Health Chico, and Indian Health, Northern Valley Indian Health are where the patients go for that. Universal coverage, but not universal caregivers to see them. Bummer.
Right. And, you know, it points out that still today, your health depends on your zip code. There's been several different studies, one recently that showed in L.A. that the rate of amputation as a complication, you know, like of a leg or an arm or something, or a foot, as a complication of diabetes, totally depends on the zip code that you live in.
Wow.
And the zip code, correlates with your access to health care, which correlates to poverty and many other things. So, I can tell you that in L.A., a close friend of mine was able to switch to was on a Kaiser plan and was able to switch to a different Kaiser plan through the health benefits exchange. I would say really an identical Kaiser plan. And ended up paying like $150 less a month in premiums. So, that choice is not offered everywhere throughout the state. So we still have tremendous inequality in access to care in our healthcare system.
And it is so, I know this is something maybe we would talk about later, but as we discuss all this, the listeners, I hope we're putting it together in an understandable way when the listeners are listening to this. But what comes to my mind is how chaotic and big, like this gigantic puzzle with pieces all over the place and pieces flying all over the place under the guise of trying to get some health care this way or that way for our citizens, instead of stabilizing the whole system under a single plan without profit being taken by middle companies, middlemen, such as the for-profit health insurance companies, but yet supplying health care equal and appropriate for everyone equally. Same plan, same availability of all of us physicians, same quality of care. Not because you have money or don't have money or in poverty or not in poverty or know somebody who knows what the goodest plan is, but we're all equally covered, such as in a Medicare for all, an improved Medicare for all system. Why don't we do that? Let's all do that. Let's make the system that, okay?
That's a strong dose of common sense.
Yes, it really is common sense, isn't it? And like you said earlier, we are an unusual country where mm-hmm. bankruptcy for healthcare reasons, take Canada or just the fact that someone could be, that many people become bankrupt because of healthcare costs, or that the money issue gets in the way of you even having available health care, is something that in other countries it's just unfathomable. It's just not something that it's not logical, and it's just not a part of their lives. I saw a patient recently from Canada. Actually, I saw the patient from Canada at the Shalom Free Clinic. She was down visiting, and she came to the Shalom Free Clinic for a medical problem, and I said, "Whoa, here you are at a free clinic. Doesn't this seem odd to you that you had to find a free clinic to come and get some health care in your country? How do you like your system in your country?" And of course, she loved the system in her country. Money wasn't an issue. Your health care and a human element was there, not a dollar element. But in Chico, she had to scrounge around until she found a free health care clinic.
Right.
Odd.
Right.
So, we're so odd in the United States.
Well, we have a lot of pride, and we pride ourselves on being exceptional, and usually that means in many good ways. But in healthcare, yeah, we're really the last on the block to move to a rational, common sense approach to this. It's obviously a major goal to provide access and, well, quality healthcare to everybody. But it's also, makes sense to do that in a way that where we could all save money.
Right.
And these kinds of systems that we're talking about, like improving Medicare and giving it to everybody, is absolutely a way to save everybody in the country a lot of money. I mean, another Canadian example for comparison would be, drugs, mm-hmm. Prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Canada negotiates with the drug companies, and they get the same drugs that we do, but they only pay about one-third of what we pay. Because of their ability, their system has the ability to negotiate with the pharmaceutical industries, and ours does not.
Well, I was just going to say, we all, and I don't know about you, but my patients, it's not uncommon for them to talk to me. They ask me, "Well, what do you think about me getting my medications from a company out of Canada, same medicine?" And I say, "Of course, go for it." It just seems so odd, but patients are finding that is the case. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
That's another thing, as you said, about the Affordable Care Act. One thing that did not happen and hasn't happened is curtailing the astronomical rise of the cost of prescription medicines in this country.
Yeah.
And I've noticed over the last year or so a very steep rise, an astronomical rise. And I was trying to think about why that would be. What's happened lately that over the last year or so that would have brought that event about? And I'm wondering if you have an idea about it, but I'm wondering if the pharmaceutical companies are thinking that maybe the golden egg is soon to be taken from them, because there will be some kind of availability to do some price collective bargainings. Maybe we'll graduate from this Affordable Care Act into something that includes some collective bargaining by our government, so that we weren't at the mercy. There is nothing holding back the pharmaceutical companies from charging whatever they want. It baffles me. I do a lot of diabetes.
Right.
And insulin, as you know, just heard an article on NPR this morning about insulin in the United States. There are no generics, period. And that means, and then why is that? Well, it's a good question why that is in the United States, no generic insulins. There are, in other parts of the world, there are some generic insulins, but it costs hundreds of dollars per month for insulin on for patients, many patients that I have, hundreds of dollars per month for their insulin alone. And now how are they going to do that? I saw a patient today who was one of these patients that you talked about who was, you said 100, you know, Medicaid, currently 138% of poverty level, which is great that it expanded to that. Well, he's just beyond that on his income. He cannot afford private health insurance. He's self-employed. But he is he has type 1 diabetes, but he has a significant amount of insulin resistance, so he needs a lot of insulin per day. He can't afford it. And so he either lives his life with elevated blood sugars until he, like you were saying, loses a leg or some other complication, or he scrounges to find insulin. So in his particular case, he's working with an insulin-making company to get some free insulin, but that's a major hassle. And anyway, the cost of medications has skyrocketed over the last year or so. We have no collective bargaining. They do what they want, and we, the people, pay the price. Unfortunately.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, I had a couple thoughts about that, too. I've also heard this issue in the HIV-AIDS community.
Uh-huh.
As you know, the treatment for HIV and AIDS is now a drug cocktail, which is really expensive.
Yes.
And those drugs are also not yet generic. And so, I mean, that's a problem all by itself. But what happens with these in private insurance plans is if you need some kind, you know, you have a copay based on, you know, basically the tier, they put them into three different tiers. So if it's a generic, your copay is, you know, $10.
Mm-hmm.
But if you need some specialty drug, like an HIV drug, or maybe you're telling me insulin, you know, the copay is like $50 per drug. And if you're on five or six of these things, that's per month. And it adds up really quickly. That's a problem, I'm sure, for many patients who require, you know, pharmaceuticals as part of their ongoing treatment. But I would say that the political backstory is, of course, fascinating when, when President Bush added Medicare Part D, which was a significant improvement to the Medicare program. Prior to that, there was no coverage for prescription drugs. In dealing with, you know, the big pharmaceutical companies, pharma, pharma had a lobbyist, Billy Taubman, who used to be a congressman, who negotiated that that the Part D addition to Medicare could, the government was prohibited from negotiating lower rates. So that's really crazy, especially given the fact that the Veterans Administration, another government agency, is not prohibited from negotiating lower rates. So here's the U.S. government paying, you know, one lower set of rates for medicines that prescribes to veterans, but you know, for our seniors, we're stuck paying these high rates because, you know, because of the lobbyists from Big Pharma basically had success. So again, things that are totally not fair in the politics of our system.
Exactly. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so we really have a lot to talk about
sure.
as far as things that aren't working yet.
Yes,
maybe we should talk about some of the solutions.
Yes. I think starting out with, from my standpoint, if we begin with what is our goal, I always like to stop when we're talking about healthcare availability and this plan or that plan, et cetera, I like to always remember what our goal is. What is our goal? Is our goal to have healthcare for all of our people in this country and have that be available and appropriate healthcare, not sub-quality, but equal and appropriate healthcare for all of us? And then, once we all are agreeing that that is our goal, then we set about accomplishing that. For instance, you talked about in 2009 when Congress sitting around, well, a committee in Congress sitting around and discussing what turned out to be the Affordable Care Act. What was not part of that discussion, as you know, as a PNHP person, was a universal health care plan such as Medicare for All. That was not on the table. It wasn't allowed to be on the table. But right. Again, the private health insurance industry kind of lobbyists kind of, in my mind, led the discussion of where to go with the Affordable Care Act. Private for-profit insurance companies win, and we'll see how the people come out is kind of the way of it, that it worked out. But again, mm-hmm. when we sit down to how to figure out how to fix this, remember, I think we should all remember that we want equal and appropriate health care for all of us. How do we do that, Bill?
Yeah, you know, I would just add one more example, too. I think when, you know, so this whole thing of, you know, the role of government in providing health insurance is something that, you know, causes some extreme reactions in our political system. But I think if there was a way to have the conversation with any person who lives in this country as an individual sitting in your living room, you know, talking about, well, what do you think our goal should be for healthcare? Do you think everybody should be able to get healthcare? Removed from the political conversation, I think everyone says yes to that. You see it in things like, you know, here where I live in Southern California, you know, someone was in a bicycle accident and needed, you know, in the hospital, did not have insurance, needed some expensive treatment. And, you know, what do the neighbors do when they throw a bake sale? They start a fund
right.
these days. Maybe
right.
they have a Kickstarter campaign on, you know, on the internet, but there's everybody pitches in to take care of our neighbors. And, you know, I'm in some ways you're really proud of that. People really do care about each other in this country. And the other ways it's so sad because it would just be so much easier if everybody already had health care.
Exactly.
You know,
hey,
like
Bill.
We do it in other countries. So, so really, I think what we need to do is I, you know, would have preferred had government started with our Medicare program. You know,
mm-hmm.
basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of us who are working are paying into the Medicare system with every paycheck. And then, you know, for that, when we turn 65, the government provides us with health insurance. And that health insurance, you know, my elderly mother passed away recently, but, you know, her Medicare allowed her to see any doctor in the United States. She wasn't limited to a network. She wasn't limited to a geographic area. If she wanted a second opinion in New York, she could get one. Not that she did. And it clearly wasn't tied to employment. She didn't have to have a job. So there really was freedom. It was completely portable, freedom of choice, good everywhere. Medicare is one set of benefits. Those, you know, Medicare, you always know what you're going to get because it's one, the benefits for Medicare are the same everywhere across this country. And so the administrative costs of administering a system like that are tremendously less.
Yes.
Medicare, I think, spends somewhere around 2% on administrative overhead.
Unbelievable.
So that 98% of the money we pay into the system is really going for our health care. And that's one way that a system like Medicare, if we expanded that to everybody, could cover us all and save money as well. That's one of the factors. There are, of course, others. So I still think it's something that we aspire to promote the need to take our Medicare program as it is, make some improvements to it, and make it available to everyone from birth to death. That was the original intent for Medicare. Way back in the days of Truman and Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
they talked about a health insurance program for the middle class. Back in the 40s, they tried to introduce some legislation that would do that. In 1965, when Medicare finally passed, I think a lot of people hoped that it would cover everybody. That's what it was supposed to have done. And yet the politics of the day, unfortunately with the American Medical Association opposed, I would say kind of on the wrong side of history.
Right.
You know, we came up with Medicare for people 65 and over, and we started the Medicaid program for certain poor people. Later, coverage for the disabled was added. But 50 years later, the middle class is still left out. And I think it's time that we finish what we started.
I totally agree with you. Well spoken. Hey, I want to mention two things, or I want you to mention part of it. Can you, we've got to move along a little bit here, but first of all, let me say that on April 16th, so a month from today, Thursday, April 16th, at Inlow Conference Building, which is on Esplanade across the street from the main hospital, at 6 in the evening. There will be a forum. Inlow Hospital and the PNHP is co-sponsoring a forum on this subject that we have been discussing today, Affordable Care Act and fixes to that. Dr. Bill Skeen, that we're listening to currently, will be one of the three panelists that we will be able to learn from. And there will be, and this is a big thing, there will be a question and answer session after presentations from the three panelists. One of the panelists will be from a hospital-oriented association. Another one will be a former president of the California Medical Association, who is a practicing physician in Paradise. And then they will each do a presentation, and then there will be question and answers. Again, that is April 16th, Inlow Conference Building, no cost, 6 o'clock in the evening. Open to anyone in the public. Open to the public. Please come. The second thing, Bill, I wanted you to briefly tell us about Lobby Day.
Sure. The Health for All Lobby Day is taking place this year in Sacramento on April 12th and April 13th. PNHP California, with our partners who support universal health care for all, a single payer, have done a number of lobby days over the past few years to put pressure on our legislators in Sacramento to really address seriously in California the needs that we've been talking about for the past hour here. So this year, we have two issues that we will be promoting. One is health care for the undocumented, and then also letting our legislators know that it's time for them to move to a publicly funded system for all Californians, such as Medicare for All. In fact, we would like to see California set up as a Medicare for All demonstration project for the rest of the country.
Excellent.
You know, we are like the sixth or eighth largest economy in the world, and mm-hmm. We could definitely be the place in the nation that experiments with a Medicare for All kind of program, and the rest of the country could see how we do. So basically, those are the two issues that we'll be talking about to our legislators. On Sunday, April 12th, there will be a leadership, Health for All Leadership and Training Conference in Sacramento at the Sheraton Grand.
People
to pre-register for that. And then on Monday, there'll be a march, rally, and press conference on the north steps of the Capitol, and everyone's invited to turn out for that.
Is there a contact information, phone number, if people are interested in going down to hear more about this, or an email site that you can think
of? Yes, there's definitely. So there's a website. It's healthforall.eventbrite.com where you can register to participate, but there's also a lot more information about what's going on. For All is health with the number 4 and then all dot eventbrite, E-V-E-N-T, BRITE.com. Healthforall.eventbrite.com. You get lots of information and register for the event.
Very good. And I want people in Chico to know, if you're interested in going to the Lobby Day in Sacramento that Dr. Skeen has been talking about, there is a member of our community, John Martinez, at 345-5503, who is putting together a local carpool for that, to help people get down to Sacramento for Lobby Day on April 12th or 13th and 13th. John Martinez, 345-5503. Well, Dr. Skeen, thank you so much. I'll be seeing you in 1 month from today, April 16th, at the Inlow Conference Room or conference building at 6 in the evening, April 16th, for a forum on this subject. And it, again, will include availability of question and answers from the public. Please come to that. And any last words, Dr. Skeen?
It's a pleasure to be here. I would just say there's also information on our website, pnhpcalifornia.org, about the Lobby Day.
pnhpcalifornia.org.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Well, I'll be talking to you in a month. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Skeen. Keep up the good. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Ken.
Bye-bye. Dr. Lundberg, Mark Lundberg from Butte County Health Department, sitting here patiently with me. How are you today, Dr. Lundberg?
Dr. Logan, it's great to hear you and Dr. Bill Skeen talk about these issues. Certainly, I hear in Butte County the growing pains of the Affordable Care Act and the expansion of Medi-Cal. There have been challenges, haven't there?
Yep.
And I think, Dr. Logan, you do you think you might pursue a career in politics?
Probably not. Probably not there, Dr. Lundberg.
You have a lot of good ideas.
I like to see humans, patients, and yourself. You're kind of in politics as a a lot of your work is kind of political in some way, is it not, or no?
Oh, I try to stay out of that part of it. There's plenty of public health that's hands-on that
there you
I enjoy
go.
Too.
Very good. So, other subjects that you want to talk to us about, that we want to hear from you about today, Dr. Lundberg, I realize we've kind of trimmed down the available time for you to educate us, but I know I want to hear some information from you today.
Well, I wanted to tell you about one of the most deadly infections that I treat. And that deadly infection is more deadly than meningococcal meningitis, more deadly than yellow fever, more deadly than anthrax or plague, Ebola. And the interesting thing about this infection, we detect it in Butte County every year. This last year, we had 8 detections of this incredibly serious, deadly infection. In fact, just in the last couple of weeks, we had our first detection. You know what that might be? Any guesses there that come to mind?
Well, I do, because you talked to me earlier today about it. I could cheat and give you a word, a name, but what is this deadly disease, Dr. Lundberg? And tell us about it and what we need to do.
Well, it's rabies. And you
rabies.
Know, rabies is a virus exclusively in mammals. It is nearly 100% fatal when people have symptoms. There have been some really rare cases where someone was recovered. It's been recognized since ancient times as a cause for profound suffering and death. Rabies, though, is not very obscure, though. It is known to most. Think about in popular culture how many references there are to rabies. The great children's movie and novel, Old Yeller, that was a rabid dog. And there was some novel by Stephen King, Cujo, which is about a family terrorized by a rabid dog, and how many families have had their dogs responsibly vaccinated, and they talk about rabies. And so it's certainly not obscure, but it's it is a really fatal disease. The last time we had a human case in Butte County was back in 1995. There's been a case of in Glenn County since then. In the United States, in about a 10-year period recently, there was only 18 cases of rabies. So it's not a really a very common disease in the United States. What it is affect the world much more. In rabies, the opportunity for the infection occurs mainly through bites of rabid animals. In the United States, there's quite a bit of opportunity for rabies because about 2% of the United States citizens have a dog bite in each year. It's about 5 Wow. million bites a year. 800,000 of those seek medical attention every year. So it does impact our ERs, medical care providers. Under some circumstances, when a bite occurs, people get shots. They get rabies shots, and people probably have heard of that. And a number of people get rabies shots every year in Butte County because of a potential exposure to rabies. They get those shots usually in emergency room or prompt cares. It's a very expensive and a very expensive treatment, and we want to try to avoid that. Prevention is critical. It's the most critical part of rabies prevention. Keep your dogs, your cats up to date on their rabies vaccine. Teach your children how to prevent bites. There are things you can do. You can go on to websites where they have some really excellent recommendations on how to help children learn about how to avoid bites. You know, avoid unknown dogs. Always ask permission from a dog owner before you pet a dog. There's just examples.
That's a good idea.
Also, avoid contacts with bats. Bats are really, really important in our environment. but they're not. They're very. They are the cause of most rabies in Butte County.
You're not talking about baseball bats. You're talking about the flying bats.
That's right, flying bats.
Ah.
And you know, they do a lot of good for our environment, but don't try to have them too close in. And support animal control services. You know, every community, every city in Butte County has an animal control officer or an animal control service or shelters that need your help and support. Mm-hmm. And call animal control if you are bitten. And then if you have a dog, a lot of these animal control services are supported through licensing of dogs. So have your dog licensed would be a way to support also good animal control. So rabies, it's one of those ancient diseases, but still important. And we have a lot of rabies control that we're doing in Butte County.
Dr. Lundberg, thank you so much. I keep telling you this. I'd like to have you on for a longer period of time in the near future. Are you okay with that?
You bet. It's a really great to be here with you. You have a great show, and you have a great radio voice there, Dr.
You have so much to offer to the public, knowledge wise, and we are going to have you back on soon, Dr. Lundberg. Thank you, Dr. Lundberg, and thank you, Bill Skeen, Executive Director of Physicians for National Health Program, California Branch. Thank you to Ray Lager, the engineer of this show. He tries to keep me in line. He has a big job doing that. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Mary's Gone Crackers, manufacturers award-winning gluten-free and certified organic and vegan crackers, pretzels, and cookies in their own dedicated gluten-free factory or facility in Gridley, California. Their products are allergy-friendly and can be found in grocery and health food stores throughout the United States and Canada. More information at Mary's, that's M-A-R-Y-S, GoneCrackers.com or 888-258-1250. The opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. I tell you what, stay tuned for Story Garden. We'll take a little music break here and stay tuned for Story Garden. See you in a month, 1 month. Bye-bye.
To be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, no. Or prescriptions to be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
All in my baby's arms. A good